Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And it was truly a monumental week in LGBT history. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people are protected from employment discrimination under the federal 1964 Civil Rights Act.
As trans people of color continue to be murdered at alarming rates, the largest demonstrations in history for black trans lives were held from coast to coast.
Our guest is going to be attorney James Essex of the ACLU LGBT and HIV Project, who was the attorney for the late Amy Stevens in the landmark court case and Donald Zarda. And we hope to be joined by Kiara St. James, who is the co-founder of the New York Transgender Advocacy Group.
Meanwhile, President Trump used the fourth anniversary of the Pulse nightclub massacre in Orlando to deny health care under the Affordable Care Act to transgender people and to women in general. We'll ask James if the Supreme Court decision has any relevance to this.
And a horrible story you might have read about this week. An Egyptian LGBT activist who had been imprisoned and tortured for flying a rainbow flag, has taken her own life in exile.
Terrible.
But
we're in a semi-celebratory mood, at least, and so we have brought back our favorite lawyer, or does that mean, do I have to say one of our favorite lawyers? I'm going to say favorite. James Essex, director of the LGBT and HIV Project at the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, who has been working for a long time to give us more rights, particularly in this case in employment. And the question that's been up for debate has been, does the law, the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which forbids sex discrimination, include sexual orientation and gender identity in the definition of sex? And is discrimination in employment, which is what Title VII covers, outlawed by sex discrimination rules?
And so I want to know from James, when you read the words on the front page of the decision, an employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender violates Title VII, what did you feel?
Intense joy. This is a culmination of decades of work and decades of effort by LGBTQ advocates and folks just trying to live their lives and right wrongs in their own lives. And something we've been struggling for a long, long time. There have long been two tracks that we can use to get non-discrimination protections. One track is legislation. And so there have been efforts going back to at the federal level. 1974 was the first federal bill that would have protected at that point lesbian, gay people from employment discrimination. And actually, I think that first bill was more than just employment discrimination. It would have added lesbians and gay men to the Civil Rights Act as a whole. Obviously, that one went nowhere. And there is currently legislation that would do the same thing that's passed the House and is stuck in the Senate. So, and we've made progress on the legislative side of things. We've passed bills in many states, but not nearly as many states as we need, and still haven't done all the things we need to do at the federal level in terms of legislation. But there's been a parallel path to non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people, and that's been through the courts, and that's been through doing just exactly what the Bostock a decision issued on Monday does, which is recognize that when you discriminate against people because they're lesbian, gay, or bisexual, or because they're transgender, that is inherently, necessarily also discriminating against them because of their sex. Because you can't describe who a gay, lesbian, or bisexual person is or who a transgender person is without talking about their sex. You can't, and that is the sort of recognition that Justice Gorsuch writes about and has in the decision that came out on Monday. And so, Anne, I would just amend a little bit of what you said. It's not saying, you know, that sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination are somehow in the statute or even somehow in the word sex. It's simply saying when you fire people because they're LGBT, you have fired them based on sex. And that is, I think, transparently true, even if we have taught ourselves over time that these are different concepts and that there's that this sexual orientation is one thing, gender identity is another thing, and, quote, sex is something else.
And for the record, we spoke a couple of weeks ago, and you said, I still have hope for Gorsuch. My friends think I'm crazy, but I still have hope. And you were right. And, of course, Roberts went along with him on this.
Yeah, which is a wonderful thing, yes. And I was not sure Chief Justice Roberts was going to come along, but kudos to him. It's wonderful to have this be a 6-3 decision. I think it gives it even that much more legitimacy.
Well, and let me just expand on that. Were you shocked to get this decision, and how did you feel about the fact that Gorsuch wrote the decision?
So, look, I'm actually fine about Gorsuch, Justice Gorsuch writing the decision, especially with the decision that came out. In the sense that, look, there are things that we still are going to need to contend with. There are still going to be tactics by our opponents that we're going to have to that are not resolved by this decision. But this is a decision that is almost as good as it could be, given where we are. In the sense that there was absolutely the possibility that a win in this case would pre-decide a series of issues against us that would say, well, Amy Stevens may have won here, but if the case were about restrooms or locker rooms or sports teams, no dice. Or could have said, well, you know, this is a business, this business didn't raise religious exemption questions in the Supreme Court, but when we get there, we are going to recognize exemptions. And it may be that they do in a future case, but they didn't.
Didn't Amy Stevens' employer at the funeral home there in, I believe, Detroit, they say we have religious objections to transgenderism?
Indeed, and one of the scary things here about the religious exemptions issue is that, this is not something that's just about, oh, the churches don't want to marry gay people. Fine, they have a constitutional right not to do that. Or even religiously affiliated organizations have a religious scruple about something. In Amy's case, it's a funeral home. It's a small business. They have several locations. And they said, well, look, we're run by religious folks, and we have a religious objection basically to the existence of transgender people. And so they said we should be exempted from the Civil Rights Act because we have a religious belief, and you can't apply that that equality rule to us because it would violate our religious beliefs.
And let's mention the other plaintiffs as well. Let's make sure.
Well, let's finish this question about religious exemptions, and then we've all got about 50 questions, so. Just let James finish his sentence.
Yeah, no, so all good. So look, you're right, Andy. The religious exemptions issue was raised in Amy Stevens' case, and the trial judge actually dismissed her case, saying, "Well, they have a religious objection, and the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, means that they get to do that." The federal appeals court said, "No, Amy wins." Because she's covered by the law, and that religious exemptions defense doesn't work. When Alliance Defending Freedom, the advocacy organization, the anti-LGBT advocacy organization representing the funeral home, asked the U.S. Supreme Court to take up the question about Amy's case, they only asked them to take up the question about whether Amy was covered under the statute in the first place, and they didn't ask them to take up the religious exemptions question. I think that was a strategic decision on their part. I think that they thought that a business that has nothing religious about it other than the fact that the owners are religious is not the way to start expanding the religious exemptions doctrine in the Supreme Court. They wanted to have a religiously affiliated hospital or something like that be be the plaintiff. So I think they decided for strategic reasons that they weren't going to raise both issues. And I think they also thought, well, they were going to win this case and Amy was going to lose just because she's not covered. But what it does mean is the case before the Supreme Court didn't raise the religious exemptions issues at all. And while Justice Gorsuch does say, you know, brackets that and says that's off to the side, those are issues we'll decide in the future. From my perspective, the good thing is they said that's something we decide in the future. We don't have to decide it now. And we're not telling you anything either way about how that comes out.
But they do have another religious exemption case coming up with the Philadelphia Adoption Agency. And that's a Catholic Charities organization that's getting money from the city. And the city said, we're going to stop funding you because you discriminate. And the Catholic Charities went to court to say, you can't do that to us because we have a religious exemption. And that's coming to the Supreme Court.
Yes. And in fact, we represent defendants in that case, some interveners who joined the lawsuit to help the city of Philadelphia defend against that lawsuit. The case has been granted review by the Supreme Court. It'll be argued sometime in the fall. And it's really an audacious claim. They say, look, it's a private agency that is hired by the city of Philadelphia to evaluate prospective foster parents who would take care of kids who are wards of the city, that the city has an obligation to take care of. The city says, here's the contract, here's the money to do the work. And the terms of the contract are including various different things, including you can't discriminate on any ground that aren't relevant to the ability to care for kids. And that means you can't discriminate based on sexual orientation. And the agency is like, well, hold on a second. We have a constitutional right to get a contract from the government to do the government's work with the government's money, but then decide not to do it on the government's terms, but to do it on their own terms because they have religious beliefs in the area. If that claim works, it means that every government in the country that contracts work out to private agencies, and every government does it, federal government, local government, state governments, they all do it, is all of a sudden not going to be in control of its contracts anymore. Anytime a government contracting agency says, well, I have a religious reason that I don't want to do, you know, clause 5B, right, that leads to madness. That said, Supreme Court took review of this case, so I am, I am worried about that. And that is what's at stake in that case is not just a question of adoption agencies. It's not just a question of religious exemptions for with regard to LGBTQ folks. It could mean that in the context of employment or businesses open to the public or healthcare providers. Adoption agencies, et cetera, all of those entities could discriminate on any basis that they want to, race, sex, age, religion, anything, if they have a constitutional right, the constitutional right that they are asking for. It's an enormously scary case, and I hope, obviously, that it does not come out badly, but it's something that we are all going to have to pay a lot of attention to and fight.
Let's talk a little bit also about the other plaintiffs, the gay plaintiffs in these cases. Gerald Bostock is the surviving plaintiff in the case. Mm-hmm. He's there on the right in the picture. Well, tell us about him.
So Gerald's a wonderful man. He was not our client, but I was so happy to meet him at the Supreme Court arguments. He was a social worker. For Clayton County, Georgia, working with kids and I think recruiting mentors and families to help kids. And his situation was he was a longtime worker, got good reviews at work, and then all of a sudden he's a sporty gay and he joined a gay softball league. And somebody
that legal term sporty gay.
Sporty gay, it is. And I am not a sporty gay, but he is a sporty gay. And somebody at work learned that he was in this gay softball league somehow. And so word gets around and the next thing he knows, he's fired. And so he files a lawsuit saying, hey, I got fired. And, you know, lawsuit, like lots of people file lawsuits because they feel that what has happened to them is wrong and is discriminatory. And he was just told at the very beginning of his lawsuit, sorry, you can't sue because it's you're complaining about being discriminated against because you're gay, and federal law doesn't cover that. And so now he has his name on the decision that says, yes, it does.
And again, the grounds would be, and again, we hear the word textualist, it's because he loves someone of the same sex rather than someone of the other sex.
Exactly. And so here's the analysis that Justice Gorsuch does, and I think it's completely right. He says, look, question is, the statute says discrimination because of sex is unlawful. And, you know, they say one approach to it is to update the understanding of what sex means to a 2020 understanding. That's not what Justice Gorsuch did. He said, look, assume that it means just biological sex, his term, or sex assigned at birth. And we didn't concede that that's what it meant. We said, even assuming for argument sake, that that's what it means. And that's what Justice Gorsuch writes. He says, take Gerald Bostock. He's a gay man, meaning he's a man who's attracted to other men. If Gerald were a woman attracted to other men, he wouldn't have lost his job. So changing his sex means he either gets fired or doesn't get fired. That means his sex, he was fired because of his sex and his sexual orientation, but because of his sex. And Justice Gorsuch says, that's all you need. That's the whole deal. To Amy Stevens, the same deal, right? So she's trans, so she's a transgender woman, meaning she's a woman who's assigned male at birth. If she were a woman who was assigned female at birth, she wouldn't have been fired by the funeral home.
And Donald Zarda is a, you know, jumping out of planes.
Don Zarda was more than sporty and very, very courageous. So yeah, Don Zarda was a skydiving instructor at an outfit on Long Island here in New York State. And he was my client, or his estate was my client, with other lawyers on the case. I never met him. He died in 2014 in a tragic accident, skydiving accident. From the videos I've seen, from talking to the people who knew him, his surviving partner and his sister, he sounds like he was like a ball of energy. And just life of the party kind of guy. And here's his story. So Bill Moore, his surviving partner, tells a story about their first date. They meet, I don't remember where they meet. The next morning, Don takes him skydiving. That's like the joy of life, something he loved, and he immediately wanted this man that he had met, that he fell in love with, to share that joy. That, I think, captures something about Don Zarda.
So he's doing a tandem jump with a woman, and she's a little nervous being hooked to a man, which is how it works. I've done it myself, and I wasn't nervous. But anyway, and her boyfriend is there. And I think, right, and to calm her down, he says, don't worry, I'm gay.
Yes, he's like, look, and he said, like, this is something that happens with some frequency that people get uncomfortable with the physical proximity. And so he says to her something like, I'm gay and I have the ex-boyfriend to prove it, or something like that. And he thought nothing of it. He was just trying to make her feel more comfortable. He then gets fired, and the employer tells the unemployment insurance agency in New York State that he was fired for disclosing inappropriate information to a customer. Well, you show me the straight person who has been fired for sharing the fact that they're straight to a customer. There is no such person. So this is a double standard. This is like, you know, they were not comfortable with him being gay, and they, as much as said it in that filing with the unemployment board. So that's what that case was about.
So let's talk about the implications of this decision on Monday. It doesn't apply to workers at small businesses with fewer than 15 employees. And there are all sorts. It doesn't apply for housing. It doesn't apply for public accommodations. I'm not even sure there are protections for public accommodations in this law. And what about the military? And what about, you know, all the other ways we want to be protected?
Yes. So, no, very good question. And so, let's take it in stages. First off, you're completely right. This decision is technically just about employment. It's just about Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which bars employment discrimination.
It's not even about a constitutional question of equal protection. It's just the law.
It's just this statute, this federal law passed by Congress, and the question is, what does it mean? And it's just employment. You're also right that Title VII covers employers with 15 or more employees. So it's a bunch of employers, but it's not all of them. And it's actually, I think, the majority of employers in America are small employers that are smaller than 15. That said, it does apply to those employers in all 50 states. Whether there's a local law or a state law or not, doesn't make any difference. LGBTQ people are now covered against employment discrimination in all 50 states as long as you work for an employer that has 15 or more employees. Okay, so that's that. Now, but there's a massive implications for other contexts in the following sense. This decision says that the term because of sex in Title VII covers LGBTQ folks. Fine. There's no reason that the same language in other federal statutes doesn't mean the same thing. And I think that what's going to happen is that in short order, courts are going to decide that Title IX, which is a federal law that bars sex discrimination by schools, any school that receives federal funding, which is basically all of them, they're going to be covered.
Bye, Betsy DeVos.
Yeah, bye-bye. Exactly. And just let's stay on that for a moment. One of the first cruel things that Betsy DeVos did in 2017 was she, along with the Justice Department, rescinded guidance that the Departments of Justice and Education had issued during the Obama administration to every school district in the country, explaining that trans kids are protected from discrimination by Title IX. Right. And that telling schools you should really, you know, take care of these kids, it's not only the right thing to do, it's also the law. She decides that the first thing to do is to say, actually, no, it's not. You can go ahead and discriminate against these kids. Terrible, ridiculous, I think disgusting thing to do, quite frankly. I think that the Bostock decision is going to mean, it's going to clarify that not only trans kids, but also LGBT kids are covered by Title IX. And that's a wonderful thing. Take healthcare. So the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has a provision in it that bars discrimination by healthcare providers and insurers. And one piece of that non-discrimination thing says sex discrimination. The Obama administration also had regulations that said that the ban on sex discrimination in Obamacare bars discrimination against trans people, including you can't have exclusions for transition-related healthcare because that's discrimination based on sex. And last Friday, the Trump administration issued a final regulation that took back all of the trans-related pieces of the Obama-era regulations under the ACA.
And if we could pause for just a second, yep. This happened on the fourth anniversary of the Pulse massacre, where we put up the pictures of all the people that we lost. The cruelty of this, doing that on this day, and I don't know if they did it because they anticipated something coming from the Supreme Court or whatever they did, but they did it anyway. And we lost all these beautiful people. I listened to their family members reciting their names on Friday. It break your heart, of course, as it broke all of our hearts. And there it was. So since they've used this argument in all of these directives from the Trump administration, do they have to that's the only justification that they offered. Sex doesn't mean this. Now it does. So will they withdraw it, or are you going to have to go case by case and litigate all these things?
Well, so look, I doubt they're just going to withdraw it, the regulation. But look, I think that regulation, or at least the piece about taking away the protection for trans folks under the Affordable Care Act, I think that lasted from 4 p.m. on Friday when they issued it until 10 a.m. on Monday when the Supreme Court issued its decision in Bostock. Now, as I said earlier, it's not self-executing. Bostock doesn't directly, by its own terms, apply to the ACA, but I don't see a way that it doesn't end up there. And the reality is there are two things. There are already cases, many cases filed both by the ACLU and Lambda Legal and the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund and many other organizations in the courts right now about in an effort to enforce this part of the Affordable Care Act, with the understanding that it ensures healthcare access for trans folks. So, you know, I think many of those cases are going to be the vehicles for sayings, for making clear that Bostock applies to the ACA and trans folks.
And transgender in the military? I mean, are you going to march into court and say, Your Honor, summary judgment?
No, not in the trans military context. I think Bostock is going to apply in education. It's going to apply in healthcare. It's going to apply in the Fair Housing Act, which bars sex discrimination, and now I think is going to cover LGBTQ folks. It's going to apply in credit and jury service. Those are the contexts where there already are bans on sex discrimination in federal statutes.
And public accommodations
is a gap. There are two big gaps in federal civil rights law vis-a-vis sex discrimination. There's no ban on sex discrimination in the federal law that bars discrimination by public accommodations, businesses open to the public in general. And there's no ban on sex discrimination in the federal civil rights law that bars recipients of federal funding, basically grant recipients from the federal government, which are lots of social service organizations, soup kitchens, drug rehab centers, stuff like that. When they get their federal grant, they have to agree that they're not going to discriminate based on lots of different categories, but not sex.
Interesting.
And so that Bostock only works when there's a pre-existing ban on sex discrimination.
And this is also why we need the Equality Act.
Exactly. That is a key reason that we need the Equality Act and that we are not done. This decision is a big step forward, but we don't have all of the equality protections that we need for our community. And even once we get them, you know, the equality protections on the books are one thing. Translating them into the reality of people's lives is still a lot of work after that.
The dissents in this case were kind of interesting. I mean, Kavanaugh basically said, oh, we love you gays. You know, you've done such a great job working for your rights, but separation of powers, this has to be done by the legislature. And Alito essentially said the same thing, but he went further. He was vicious. He went back and read everything that was going on in 1964 about gays. Everybody hated you. And nobody even thought about transgender. And, you know, when I read these things, you know, and again, he wouldn't zero in on the word sex. I mean, they don't zero in on the word the right to bear arms when they do the Second Amendment, which, and I'm not exaggerating about this, it only meant muskets in 1791 when that amendment was adopted. But they never say that. You know, they only do it to us.
Situational ethics. I was amused by the fact that Alito used the word preposterous, which I believe is the word that one of the justices, Lewis Powell, or was it someone else, about the idea.
Wasn't it?
Who?
Wizard White, sodomy, Byron White.
It was about the idea that sodomy should be legalized. I thought it was Powell, but who knows? Anyway, Alito used the same word, which I thought was amusing. And when Kavanaugh starts saying, you know, it's a mistake of history and sociology to think homophobia is a form of sex discrimination, I wanted to run to my bookshelves and pull out Suzanne Farr's book, Homophobia, A Weapon of Sexism, and send it to Kavanaugh. It's just insane.
Yes, it's... So look, those critiques are completely right. I got to say that I'm focused on the majority and the right.
And,
you know, there are three very frustrated justices.
And you and all your colleagues are the people that I thought of as soon as this happened, because I was wondering, I know, I had a sick feeling when I heard the decision was coming down. It's hard to be optimistic these days. We're living terrible times. But because what were you going to be able to do in federal court in if you lost it? You know, it was going to be tough. And now a lot of things have opened up. You've got a job for the day, you know.
And I thought of Frank Kameny, who I believe was the first to bring an employment discrimination case after being fired by the government for being gay. And he brought that case in 1960. And 60 years later, we have finally won in the Supreme Court a correct judgment on employment discrimination.
Absolutely. Now, Frank Kameny, a pioneering leader, somebody who had amazing courage of his convictions and just the ability to be like, okay, I know the world hates me and I'm going forward anyway. And I'm going to make my arguments and I'm going to make a lot of noise and try and make life better for other folks.
Because the term gay is good.
And being ornery can pay off. But you take a much more polite approach, James, and we're so grateful for the work that you and everyone have done and for all the real regular people who have brought these cases, who have stood up and demanded their rights and had enough self-respect to say, I'm not going to be treated like that. And I think that's miraculous, and it just makes me happy every day.
Yeah, well, thank you, and look, this is, as I said earlier, this is the culmination of like decades of work, and it's decades of work not even primarily by, you know, lawyers and legal organizations, right? It is the community's work. It is the community's work to sort of carve out a space for all of us where we can live our truths and be seen and recognized for who we are. And that's the work that so many people have done. That is what has created the context in which this decision can come out. It was also how the marriage decisions on DOMA and the Freedom to Marry came out. The arguments that we made in Obergefell and the marriage case in 2015 that worked were the same arguments that we were making in 1970 when the first case was filed. And what changed wasn't the legal arguments, what changed was the world around us. And the same thing has happened on non-discrimination.
And the justices, most of them, can see that too. And they have been, whether they're working off the public opinion or they've been educated and enlightened by the public and their experience, they're at this same place too.
Absolutely.
And they have LGBT friends, I mean, and work with LGBT people. So, I mean, Lewis Powell, when he voted against us in the sodomy case in 1986, didn't think he knew gay people. And he had a closeted clerk, apparently. But so what?
He had a gay clerk, indeed.
And Gorsuch has had a couple and some friends, too. All right. Well, we won't meander farther on this, but
go back to
work on the next cases, James.
We're hard at work. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. So now we have to ask our director. Do we have our other guest?
Sorry, we do not.
Okay.
No word.
All right. Well, maybe next week. So we'll move on to what's been going on. And as we and what has been going on and what we had hoped to talk to our next guest is about is this explosion of activity in support of Black trans lives.
And now look at that picture. That is the Brooklyn Museum. I have never seen a demonstration that large in Brooklyn. And this was about Black trans lives matter. It is. They estimated 15,000 people showed up for this in the middle of the pandemic, wearing masks. But they, wow, it was just unbelievable.
It looks like a million people to me, but 15,000 was the police estimate of the crowd. It was just shocking. This demonstration was conceived 2 weeks ago, and not only did this happen in Brooklyn, and let's show the other picture from Brooklyn. All these ideas came out very quickly. Let's all dress in white.
Well, this was to mirror a very famous demonstration by the NAACP almost 100 years ago, marching on Fifth Avenue in white.
Fifth Avenue, silent. Everyone dressed in white demonstration. So the organizers of this took those ideas, put it out to the world by social media, and 2 weeks later had that crowd in front of the Brooklyn Museum. And not only that, they also had the same huge crowds in L.A. I think we have a picture from L.A. We had told you about how they were having problems with doing a Pride March in L.A. Well, finally, the black LGBT community took over and said, we'll stage the march, and we're going to make it a march for black trans lives. And they had an enormous crowd there. There was also a huge crowd in Boston. And I think maybe... Well, there
were big demonstrations in Chicago, Salt Lake City, El Paso. Some of these were LGBT marches for Black Lives Matter.
Yep. But these marches are just ballooning. And there will be a queer liberation march for Black Lives and against police brutality here in New York a week from Sunday, Sunday, June 28th, the last Sunday in June, the regular Pride Day. No regular Pride Parade, but the Queer Liberation March is again for the second year staging a People's March focused on Black lives and against police brutality this year. It's going to start at 1 p.m. And next week we'll tell you where, because we're deciding that in a meeting tonight.
And a lot of it is focused on what happened to Layleen Polanco.
Yes.
Who was a 27-year-old trans woman who died in custody at Rikers Island.
A year ago. Had a seat.
And this week we saw footage of what happened to her in jail, being neglected, had epilepsy, they weren't checking up on her, and she died.
She was apparently
humiliated by the people there, too.
Well, they didn't check on her as often as they were supposed to. There's one shot, there's video of the guards outside her solitary cell laughing at her, walking away, not coming back for 45 minutes when they're supposed to check every 15 minutes. And when they finally checked on her again, she was dead. But there, we have lost a couple of other trans people this week, several others.
Yes.
Who do we have first? Dominique Remy Fells in Philadelphia, 27 years old, trans woman, black trans woman, brutally stabbed to death, found on the banks of the Schuylkill River.
There is going to be a march for justice relative to this case, Saturday, June 20th at 1 o'clock, starting at 56th and Chestnut in there, and marching to Malcolm X Park.
And then in Liberty Township, Ohio, Rhea Milton, 25 years old, also a black trans woman, found shot, murdered.
Lured to a park.
Yes.
Ambushed and shot to death. Two people have been arrested, an 18-year-old man and a 14-year-old girl, for this murder.
And they're searching for one other who they suspect in the death. She was a home health aide. She was employed. She had a regular life, but she was lured there for a robbery. These lives are just not respected and not honored. And
learned about Jane Thompson in Colorado, 33, yeah. A white trans woman shot to death in Mesa, Colorado, killed on May 9th, but misgendered in the initial news reports. And this is what happens in so many of these cases. And we're only learning now this was a transgendered woman.
Well, she was standing by the side of the road. Someone called the cops because she was just standing there, sort of stock still. Someone mistook her for a mannequin at one point. So the cops go out to investigate, and she eventually pulls a knife. And the cops start circling her and telling her to drop the knife. And when she started to take a step towards them, they just shot her dead.
And our state senator, Brad Hoylman, is once again pushing for passage of an end to the walking while trans legislation. Essentially, it's a loitering bill in New York that they use to arrest and harass trans women, especially on the street. And he's trying to get that repealed and stopped.
And it looks like they have enough votes for that. Whether they'll be able to actually go ahead and do it is a question.
Yeah. In Idaho, athletes and civil rights groups are telling the NCAA, you got to move the 2021 men's basketball championship from Idaho.
And they did. They did. They moved the – they had the first and second rounds of the NCAA men's basketball championships scheduled for Boise. And they have now agreed to move those out of Idaho because Idaho has this new law forbidding trans athletes from participating in sports in their lived current gender. And so the NCAA has stood up again. They moved stuff out of North Carolina when they had a bad law, and now they are moving the tournament out of Idaho.
And this is why I'm glad I watch Gay USA, because I learn so much. Now, maybe you're going to tell me that Ben Carson has pulled back, but he has proposed a rule that single-sex shelters could choose to accommodate only people whose biological sex matches the single sex that they serve. Again, scrapping a 2016 Obama guidance. They say you must refer them to another shelter, but that's not always an option.
A couple of other random things. In San Diego, California, the Pride organization there has announced that they will bar police marchers in any of their events and police booths at any festivals. The 2020 march is canceled, but this is for going forward. And the LGBT Center in San Diego will not allow any cops with guns in the building. This is, you know, there's a tidal wave of change coming, and it's tremendously exciting.
And Colorado has banned gay, trans panic defenses.
Yes.
Colorado.
Now, and in Michigan, a judge says that the LGBT statewide rights group there, Fair and Equal Michigan, can have an extension on the time to gather signatures till October to try to get a non-discrimination bill on the ballot there. That's a COVID decision. They had hit the deadline. They didn't have enough signatures, but the judge says, no, you're right. It should be extended. Oh, and I think we're burying the lead. Jacksonville, Florida, where Trump is all set to hold his acceptance speech for the nomination, the city council there has restored the sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination law, which had been canceled because of technical issues in the way it was passed. So they went back to the city council, and by a vote of 15-4, they passed the correct version of the non-discrimination law.
Right. By the way, obviously, we didn't talk too much about what the world of bigots were, how they were reacting to this decision. But I was especially struck by the head of the Catholic Bishops Association to the big gay decisions out of the Supreme Court, Jose Gomez. He said, protecting our neighbors from unjust discrimination does not require redefining human nature. You know, they keep repeating unjust discrimination. But it's never unjust when it's against us. They haven't supported a single LGBT rights law. I mean, even the Mormon Church has supported some LGBT rights laws, but the Catholic Church never does.
Well, we hope they're shrinking. Rise and Resist appeared at the Trump West Point graduation speech all over the place. But
exciting.
Sorry?
Exciting. Take a look at the picture there. They went all the way up to West Point.
Yes.
And obviously, if you watch the president after the speech, I think they rattled him.
Oh, come on. I don't think they were visible to him, although there were people on the river, the Hudson River there. West Point's right on the river, so there were demonstrators on the river, and Rise and Resist was outside the front gates there with their sign. That's great. But the funniest story of the week is really about what, in moving around their convention, the Republican National Committee had to decide to adopt the same platform that they had in 2016. So it reads things like, the current administration is screwing up the country, and it goes on and on and on about the current president. In 2016, they were talking about Obama, but now they're talking about Trump.
The Senate this week advanced another anti-LGBT judicial nominee, Corey Wilson, to the Fifth Circuit. which is, and Gregory Angelo, the former log cabin president, who didn't endorse Trump in 2016, but he's now working in the Trump White House as a spokesperson for the Office of National Drug Control Policy. And this, may I say, pig, lobbied against the Equality Act when it was passed by the being passed by the House.
And Trump is lying about the fact that there will be a COVID vaccine very, very soon, just like there's an AIDS vaccine. No, no, there's no AIDS vaccine. That was the trick part of that statement. Yes. Pay attention.
Well,
I was sorry to see the lesbian police chief of Atlanta had to resign over the police shooting of Rayshard Brooks. I mean,
a horrifying
murder. But she seemed to be a popular figure.
A lot of the demonstrators in Seattle want the out lesbian mayor to resign over what's going on there.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Oh, I'm annoyed that people refer to Tulsa as being a race riot. It was a massacre. It was a massacre of black people.
They literally bombed people from the sky. They killed 300 people and destroyed the entire area.
At least. And that was 99 years ago. We'll see
and
more.
Don't step out of line if you're a Republican. There was this representative, Denver Riggleman, in Virginia. He was endorsed by Trump. He endorsed Trump. He lost his primary at a state Republican convention because he had officiated at a same-sex wedding for some staff.
Yeah. I also want to commend Laverne Cox, who's been all over TV, talking about very good political opinions about all of this and talking about everyday people being the backbone of the demonstrations, the Supreme Court decision, everything else. She's been very forthright and brilliant on all of that.
Some international news?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm still scanning to make sure I'm not missing anything.
Well, you know, Trump had the nerve to hold up a gay banner during the 2016 campaign upside down. But when our embassy in South Korea did that, put up a rainbow banner and put up a Black Lives Matter banner.
That was pretty bold of the U.S. embassy in Seoul, Korea.
They were ordered to take it down.
Yep. But thank you to the embassy staff that did that. Thank you to the Supreme Court for also refusing to overturn California's sanctuary law. That was amazing. I think the word is out, so to speak, that you do not have to be completely beholden to Trump all the time. Thank you to former Equal Employment Opportunity Commissioner Hi Feldblum, out lesbian, who started all this employment stuff in the commission years ago and persisted in upholding our rights. And it was some of them came through the EEO.
Now, the UK government, Boris Johnson, has dropped a plan to make gender change easier. That's disgraceful. On the other hand, their embassy in Washington is running a Love is Love virtual pride campaign out of the embassy in Washington. You can go to @UKandUSA on Twitter for info about that. A lot of interesting things.
And speaking of the, were we speaking of Russia or were you speaking of
the UK? I was the United Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
They're going to have a pride march, by the way, on June 27th, even though they weren't supposed to. It's going to happen at 1 o'clock outside the BBC headquarters, and it's going to be the original Gay Liberation Front people marching.
Only, yes, only then, led by Peter Tatchell, who was
supporting Black Lives Matter.
Yes, and he was at the first one and everyone since. But going to Russia, I just want to alert people that on June 30th, the HBO will premiere Welcome to Chechnya, David France's new documentary about the brutal pogrom against gay men and women in Chechnya. And it's pretty harrowing. A lot of secret hidden camera stuff and just heartbreaking to see what is happening to people in Chechnya still. HBO, June 30th.
Okay. Switzerland, the National Council has approved marriage equality, 132-52. but it has to be approved by the Council of States, whatever that is, and then it goes to a referendum before they can do it. They've had civil partnerships for 13 years.
And the president of Poland is continuing to scapegoat us in his attempt to be reelected, wants to wipe us out.
And J.K. Rowling's transphobia has gotten the staff at the children's book department at her publisher saying, we won't work on her new book, The Ichabod. The publisher is standing by her. She posted a big essay trying to defend herself.
We don't have a lot of time. A heartbreaking story out of Egypt and Canada. You may remember the Lebanese rock band that has a leader who's an out gay man, and they went to Egypt and people started waving rainbow flags. Well, one of the people waving a rainbow flag was Sarah Hegazi, who was arrested. There she is at the concert waving the flag. So she was arrested, put in prison, tortured, electric shocks, beatings, everything. And so eventually she got out and she fled to Canada. But we have now heard that she really never recovered from that experience. And at age 30, she has taken her own life. And it's, talk about heartbreaking, just awful.
Heartbreaking story.
Yeah. All right. In AIDS news, there's actually a very interesting study that says those who take Truvada as PrEP in the intermittent version, where you know you're going to have sex, you take two pills before sex and two pills spaced 24 hours apart after sex, they have found that that is totally protective. And they studied 279 men and found no new infections by people who use that. So if you're not having sex on a daily basis, if you're having it intermittently, this is a strategy that you can do. You don't have to be on Truvada daily, but you have to be on it around your sexual activity. But very exciting.
And, well, certainly ought to get the blood banks to say you can take their blood.
Yes. Entertainment news. Coming up this weekend, starting Friday, a new movie, documentary Disclosure, made by our old Manhattan Neighborhood Network colleague, Sam Fetter. It's going to be on Netflix, and it is the history of trans representation in movies and TV. It's like the trans celluloid closet. And it's fascinating.
What's the title again?
Disclosure on Netflix starting Friday.
All right. We love Sam.
Yeah. No, great job. And an all-trans crew and lots of trans people interviewed, everybody you know.
So the actress Kyler Lee has come out, plays an out character on Supergirl named Alex Danvers. And that playing the character helped her come out herself. She said she felt a responsibility to authentically represent Alex's journey. And they said it was the people working on it said, that's the best coming out scene we've ever seen on television history.
Well, she now identifies as a member of the LGBT community without getting
a man since 2002. But she says they are discovering new depths of themselves together.
For those who were fans of the lesbian character, police chief played by Edie Falco on the CBS show Tommy, the show has been canceled. Is this more of canceling cop shows? Like they canceled Cops and they canceled other cop shows? I don't know, but it's not going to air anymore. And another recommendation for this week on HBO, starting Thursday and then on HBO and probably available on demand, another documentary about Roy Cohn.
Well, it's called Bully, Coward, Victim. And I didn't know the story of Roy Cohn. I didn't know that until this popped up in the film. That's his AIDS quilt panel that people made for him. Roy Cohn, Bully, Coward, Victim. This was really one of the worst people that ever lived in history, who was homosexual, who never affirmed himself, who worked against gay rights. There is such a panoply of characters, including Tony Kushner and John Waters and others, but the associations with Trump and with Roger Stone and with Paul Manafort, with everybody. You see him with all these celebrities, some of whom you like, and say, what are you doing with Roy Cohn? It is just unbelievable. So I highly recommend it, actually. Made by the granddaughter of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were put to death by Roy Cohn using horrible tactics in court that should never be allowed. Even criticized by Alan Dershowitz.
Never too late to get revenge. We've told you about Gabrielle Union and her husband, Dwayne Wade, who've been quite public about supporting their trans child. She has now optioned a book for TV called All Boys Aren't Blue by George Johnson. It's his memoir, and it's All Boys Aren't Blue in the sense of pink and blue and binary descriptions and all of that. So that will be out eventually. Let me ask you a question, Andy, because we have a couple of minutes. I went to both the Pulse Massacre Memorial at the Stonewall Inn last Friday and the celebration of the Supreme Court decision on Monday, 3 days apart. Both at Stonewall and Sheridan Square, where traditionally we all gather for any big event like that.
So Gays Against Guns at the Pulse thing.
Yeah, yes. And there were hundreds and hundreds of people at the Pulse Memorial. Hundreds of people, and very moving and significant. The people who turned out for the Supreme Court decision, there couldn't have been more than 100. It was very sparse. It was very unemotional. And some of it, I think, was because word didn't get around, but we used to just automatically go no matter what. So I don't know if we're just over it all or people are affected by didn't want to go out for the virus or what.
Well, look, I'm at 66, not going out for most of these things. And, you know, I want to go to your march on the 28th. But I want to keep a certain distance from it as well. I just don't want to get in the thick of things. So that's part of it. Yet, obviously, people are getting in the thick of a lot of things. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I spoke to people this week or heard from people who said this after the Supreme Court decision, it's the first time I've been happy about anything since the pandemic started.
Wow.
So I think it moved people very deeply. People cried.
Yeah,
people were deeply moved by it.
I heard that from people, too. I got messages, and I got messages from straight people congratulating me and saying, I had no idea, you know, that you could be fired.
I'm still waiting to hear from some of my non-gay relatives about, you know, congratulating us. Yeah, I expected more of that.
I didn't hear from my relatives. I just heard from friends.
I heard from almost every guy I've ever gone out with, that which was sweet.
Oh, you know. Very sweet. All right. Well, and I'm going to be at the end of the Queer Liberation March being a back marshal. We're out. Goodbye. See you next week.